Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of History After Hours. My name is Kevin Pumphrey, and with me, like normal, is Mr. Ron Franklin and Mr. Jeremy Nixon. We are three history teachers at Lakeside High School in Hot Springs, Arkansas. We recorded this on October the 6th, 2022, and we are back at Collective Coffee doing another live podcast in front of a bunch of our students. They asked some great questions spanning all sorts of topics, so we hope you find something useful in this podcast. And with that, we hope you enjoy the podcast. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another edition of History After Hours podcast. My name is Kevin Pumphrey, and with me, like normal, is Mr. Jeremy Nixon and Mr. Ron Franklin, and we are back. It is Thursday, October 6th at Collective Coffee in beautiful downtown Hot Springs, and we have a bunch of students staring at us, and we have a line of students ready to ask us questions, and we're going to do our best to come up with some sort of answer. So, with our first question, state your name clearly for the record and give us your question.
I'm Ellie Uldrich. And so my question, I hope I word this right. So out of all the United States like laws and writs and amendments and all their provisions, which one, if they abolished it, which one would make you decide to leave the country?
One law?
One law. Yes.
One law, one amendment,
you're talking about one right, one...
Anything that gives you a right, I guess.
Suspension of habeas corpus.
There you go. That's mine. That's absolutely mine.
Well, I mean, okay, so I'm going to argue that's still there under the Fifth Amendment. So mine is probably the Fifth Amendment because it's got due process in there. So if they get rid of the Fifth Amendment or if they get rid of the 14th Amendment, I'm out, which is really sort of strange because there is a push by some on the extreme side to repeal the 14th Amendment. Anything that deals with due process and
how many processes are due under the Fifth Amendment? I'm just curious. Like,
well,
are they enumerated?
No.
Okay, so, well then that's why I go back to the first where it says explicitly due process, because due process under the law means that you are a human being that can't be tossed away. You can't be treated like garbage and thrown and just abandoned. Like, you have those rights. To me, without that one, you're not a person. And therefore, none of the other rights matter because you're not a person that can achieve those or can receive those rights. So that's why I like it, because it's stated explicitly.
So the Constitution has two due process clauses. Uh-huh. One's in the Fifth, one's in the 14th Amendment. Okay. 14th Amendment makes the states responsible for your rights as well. So that's why there is a push to undo that from a certain group. They added the Fifth Amendment because they were worried that the original Constitution didn't go far enough to protect those individual rights and liberties. And so the Fifth Amendment's due process clause can be used as a catch-all if you had to. And so that's what, it's one of the things we go through in APUS.gov is, like, if you had to get, I make them get rid of 9 of the first 10 amendments and, which one's left. And it's usually a battle between the Fifth and the First. But the Fifth, because it's so broad.
Who won this year?
Fifth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think in first period, the First Amendment won.
Can you give a potted definition of habeas corpus? Does that have to do with just imprisonment?
Well, it's Latin for produce the body. So the original common law was literally you had to produce the body, meaning the person got the right to come before a magistrate or a judge and appear to say, you have to let me out of jail because, right? So it goes back to British common law, and it was adopted through our legal system, and it's in the Constitution itself, habeas corpus, but then when you talk about the criminal amendments, amendments 5th, 6th, 8th, those are seen to kind of expand on those ideas that were in the original.
So really you need to weave them all together for it to work appropriately?
Yeah, I mean, Madison originally argued no, but I call him wrong all the time, so I'll just call him wrong again. That's mine, though. You probably knew that was mine. Yeah.
All right. Excellent. All right. Step up. State your name.
My name is Bartley Bledsoe, and I was wondering what you guys think the outcome of the Russian-Ukraine war is going to be.
Oh, an easy one.
We had a podcast in the spring in front of students,
trying to predict this whenever it started, a couple weeks after it started, and we had no idea, and we still don't really. Are you surprised that it happened? It's still going on?
No. I think that it has progressed the way we had sort of anticipated, even though there are, I mean, day to day, you're not really sure what the give and take is going to be. But if I remember back to when we had that original conversation, we did talk about how the focus was ultimately going to be in the East. The annexation of the East was going to be a priority. The Donetsk regions and because there's agricultural stuff there, there's mining aspects there. That's been more traditionally part of Russian territory in the past, and it makes more sense than to try to go after. I mean, the hammering on Kyiv, and we talked about this, was almost. I mean, if he could have taken the country and replaced Zelensky, then I think he would have. But the resistance was there, and even if that part didn't work, you at least softened it up so that maybe you could argue for this other side. Well, if you'll just stop, then we'll just take this and we'll be happy and go on, just like we did with Crimea in 2014. So I still kind of think that's the ultimate goal, although they've kind of added in, now that they've taken large swaths in the south, Moldova's under threat possibly. I mean, you know, so it's been this weird sort of it's been morphing, you know. But I still kind of think that the eastern side is more, I mean, they're more ethnically Russian. They speak more Russian over there, although there's been a heavy resistance from some of those people too. Putin's propaganda doesn't show it that way in his own country, although I didn't see the ramping up on his troops because the war has been going so badly. Like the draft that they've just
instituted. That's what I was
going
to say. We didn't predict
something I had not anticipated.
Ukraine stood up. I mean, I know we've given them a lot of money and a lot of support coming from worldwide. But none of us, I don't think, predicted the resistance. We thought Russia, if they wanted to, would roll over and take what they wanted. And then it would be a kind of a stalemate as to how they're going to split everything. I can't believe it's that part of it where they've actually taken back a lot of land. Although now there's some action lately. I don't know if y'all been paying attention to Putin's rhetoric about, you know, other options that might occur. So anyhow, I talk about Truman dropping the bomb, Japan, and I brought up, people think that history's not relevant. Putin actually brought up the fact that the United States has used atomic bombs. And we had a debate on that last year. We're going to have another one on that this year. So things are still irrelevant.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, honestly. And I'm with them. The conscription that Putin has started, I would not have guessed. And if you look at the age range of the people that he's calling up, they are older, leaving behind families. And you see so many people leaving and fleeing Russia that...
The exodus has been an interesting thing to witness.
And so I didn't think it would go that far. So I don't know where we'll be, honestly.
Yeah, and the rhetoric for the draft conscription was very narrow. But if you look at the actual draft itself, the law, that's what's got everybody scared because it's a lot more broad and people are worried.
Okay, that, so, you know, I'm thinking even longer game than this. I mean, the Ukraine situation aside, Vladimir Putin is an older person, and he's eventually going to be out of power one way or another. If this war continues to go badly for them, which is kind of a standard in Russian history, by the way, like they haven't always historically been very good at war, accomplishing what they had hoped for in their initial phases. But let's say that he gets sick and passes away in a few years. They've accomplished maybe a little bit of what they wanted here, but then he falls out of power somehow. Either he dies or somebody takes him out or whatever, right? Or there's some sort of replacement. Because he has become such an effective autocrat, right, this dictatorial power, czar-like almost. If he goes, my question is, like, what mad scramble is there for the top of that system once he's gone? Because there is nobody to replace him.
Power
so
vacuum.
Is it like a Roman Empire sort of moment where people start scrambling for the top and they start slitting each other's throats to try to claw their way up to the top of that regime? Or is there some sort of democratic process that takes its place? I actually think the former is actually more true, that there will be this free-for-all if and when he finally goes. He's not going to be there forever. What happens after him? That's one of my big questions moving forward.
The interesting thing about that to me is we've seen a resurgence of the presence of Dmitry Medvedev, which
that boy never really went away, though.
Right, well, he was kind of relegated by Putin. He was kind of removed as the party head for a while there.
To me, though, they've worked in tandem.
He's sort of back in the media, too, now. So I'm wondering if that's...
Yeah,
interesting.
I don't know.
Just anyway, a thought.
Great question. We're not sure. We'll keep you posted.
All that to say, we don't know.
Yeah, we don't know.
Okay. Hello, my name is Molly Outler. So my question is, out of the two, Alf and E.T., which is the better 80s alien?
E.T., come on.
I don't know, man. Alf. I never really...
I'm going to say Alf.
I'm going Alf.
Y'all just like the wit and sarcasm.
True.
That is exactly why.
That's the most cringy 80s TV show.
It's horrible.
It was number one,
by the way. It's wonderfully horrible.
Yeah, it's just... Yeah, it's good bad. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just, and the fact that he's just, hey, Willie! I mean, I just like his voice, you know?
E.T.
No.
Lunchbox.
E.T.'s creepy.
It was everywhere.
E.T.'s creepy.
Hold Alf. Finger
Alf is, Alf is less creepy, less cringy.
Even though he does eat cats, right?
Okay. Well, that's a, well, that's a, oh, that's, yeah. That's a bonus, in my opinion.
Kind of me too, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, what is there another, well, Aliens. What year was Aliens? What year did Aliens come out? Or Alien, sorry. Okay, so... So 78 and 86. All right, so we can still count that.
Are Gremlins aliens?
Oh, Gremlins.
Gizmo?
I changed my vote.
Yeah.
Maybe. I loved Gremlins.
Makwa.
Oh, Yoda.
They probably have no clue what Gremlins is.
They're all aliens.
Do you guys know Gremlins? Have you seen Gremlins? Do you know what we're talking about? Okay, all right, yeah. So good. All right, well, a few of you. All right, nodding. Young babies look at you, don't know anything. All right, that's okay. So I'm going Alf. I just am. Yeah.
E.T.
You're outvoted.
Hi, I'm Natalie Shunk. Also, I would just like to point out that Molly has an Alf lunchbox.
Oh, that's
so
right.
So those are around. It's not just E.T. lunchboxes. But, okay, so.
You know why E.T. was popular? Freaking Reese's Pieces. Like, was it Mars M&M? That company. He was a corporate shill. I don't think that Alf ever was. E.T.'s a sellout.
Okay, you've convinced me.
This is going to be the most heated debate.
By the way, I've
got
to admit something. Alf was the perfect... I was the perfect age for... I watched nearly every episode. I missed E.T. I was a little young for E.T., so actually, I probably spent a lot more time looking at Alf than I did E.T.
Somewhere, and I don't know where it was.
But still.
Some country banned showing E.T. because it made parents seem like the enemy of children. And so they wouldn't allow it. I can't think of which country it was, though. It was like Sweden, maybe, which that doesn't sound right either, though. Maybe China?
I was thinking China.
Maybe China. They would, right, so that filial piety. No, you can't. Children are not supposed to updo adults. Okay, I'm sorry. We interrupted you. Go ahead.
Okay, so I was wondering, because as teenagers, we say a lot of stupid things.
Yes, you do. Are you going to continue that trend right now?
Maybe.
Okay.
But I mean, we have like little sayings that we say, you know what I mean? Like slay, that sort of thing. What have you like picked up from us that you say like in your everyday lives?
Yeet. I'm a real fan. I'm a fan of yeet. I don't know why. Just something that yeet. And the what is it? Is the past tense?
I don't think they say that
yeet
anymore.
And
oh, yoink.
I yoted. Yoink. Yoink was a good one when we were kids. I don't know.
Okay.
That's the first one that comes to mind.
This brings up a great point. Which in my class, we rank things, and I've toyed with doing the top 10 slang words of all time. There are words that have hung on for decades, like cool and dude, and every generation says them. Bro, I'm so tired of that word, but you know what that means. The thing about some of the newer words where they just make things present tense, like fire and lit and whatever, is we know they're gonna go away, most of them. Here's a good question. What is the last word to catch on that still has kept going that's been in the last 10 years? Is there anything that is...
10 years?
That's hot. Remember Paris Hilton used to do that?
they don't remember that.
No, they don't. No. But I'm saying it comes and goes so quickly with this generation. That
So we're actually asking you, like, yell out something. So I know I told you not to yell a while ago, but now I'm telling you to yell.
Slay.
What? Slay? That's how old is that?
Based.
Oh, huh? Based. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
That's a pretty hot one right now.
I don't know. Swole. YOLO.
Oh, YOLO.
Yes, YOLO. YOLO's not around anymore. That's not a thing now. Right? Really. That would... Cool is probably the most enduring one. I mean, it's just going to last and last.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't see how it goes away.
I don't think it does.
What was something that was like really popular to say when you were a kid? Because we were big on dude. I remember everything was dude. Dude, there's a lot of 80s stuff right there. Dude.
I mean, I'm the Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Yes, okay.
That's my, rad.
What did we have? Gnarly?
Gnarly, that's what I was about to say.
What else? Sometimes I'm trying to think of 80s
stuff.
So
my mom would be like, that's so hip.
Hip.
It's something that they would say. Groovy, of course, the 70s.
Yeah. Oh, that was the, yeah, the bomb.
That's actually the bomb. The bomb. That's, that hung on for, it still might be something people say.
You know the most recent one to annoy me, though, is gas.
Gas? I don't know if I know that one.
Like, what's the whole drip thing? Where you drip?
Drippy. Oh, yeah, the drip.
Drippy?
Drippy.
Yeah.
Can we get rid of that yet?
That's annoying.
Now we're just going to turn into old people.
We are.
Talk about things we hate.
Anything past 2000.
Let me tell you what bothers me about the young ones. Yeah, everything.
What about the overuse of the word random?
Yeah.
So random.
That's so random. It happens every day.
Okay, but let's just go back to bro. Can we kill that? Or let's bring that down from 95 to maybe 55.
He cannot kill that.
Are you more upset about bro?
100 times a day in my class.
It comes from the gamers, right? Bro, bro, bro. I mean, everybody's saying it.
Are you more upset about bro or bruh?
Bruh.
Bruh. I don't mind bruh. Bro is, I hear, too much.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, excellent. All right, next.
My name is Christopher Crow, and one of these things is not like the other.
I'm Lakeside alum, though. Yeah, returning. Yeah, there you go.
As a now a fellow teacher,
correct?
Can I ask you guys how well do you believe you handled your first year as a teacher, and was it the fire and brimstone that I'm currently experiencing?
Okay, first of all, you're doing better than I did, and I should write an apology letter to all my students in the first. Maybe 8-9 years that I taught, really. but definitely the first couple of years.
You coupled that up with coaching too, though, right?
I'm an athlete. I'm going to be a coach teaching history. What's that? And then after 3 years, it all flipped. And I fell in love with history, and I realized I wasn't cut out to be a coach. So I need to apologize to those students. I don't know if I taught them anything. But that first year of teaching, a girl left my class and said she enjoyed it, but she couldn't remember really much of what she learned. That crawled all over me, and that, the wall. I'm going to make them learn something. They're going to leave my class with something. So you're going to learn a lot this year. So good or bad, you will learn. Yeah. And some of that stuff you're going to learn is going to be with you for the rest of your career. So I'm so glad you're teaching, though. We need more.
Yes.
See, part of what you're experiencing, though, is that you came into this at a relatively young age. You're not that much older than some of the people that you're now guiding through this process. Whereas I came in, I was 33 or 34 by the time I started, because this is second career for me.
Me too.
And so I think that the life experiences that I had, especially when I was guiding people through, like in a business scenario, corporate or whatever, then managing people in those ways actually was a helpful to me once I got into the classroom. With that being said, brand new teachers, they don't teach you how to teach in a teacher's college. It's just not a thing. You learn about, well, here's the safety rules, and here's about ethics, and here's how you take role, and here's a little bit of class on discipline that might, you know, two or three. Okay. But once you get in there, it's a different animal, because you don't know what clientele you're going to get necessarily. You don't know what level you're going to have. Did you get like 7-12? Is that your certification?
Yes, okay, I'm mostly with my 7-8, and then I have one grade of ninth graders, as well as some juniors and seniors.
Every one of those levels is a different beast of its own, you know. So I've taught everything from 6 through college level, and you have to figure out what works with that particular audience,
and what works for you,
and to figure out your own groove too. It's going to take a while to do that, to master, to get a command of the content, and then figure out how you want to deliver that. How do I want to weave this narrative together, right? I mean, it's just going to take a while to do that. When I first started teaching AP classes, I was a day ahead of the kids. I mean, I was learning it deeply as we went, but it takes a while to kind of get comfortable with that, and once you sort of have it, then you can mold it. So it's going to, it is sort of trial by fire, especially at your age. So don't give up. Just like, right, stick to your guns and do what you know is right.
I have you gentlemen to thank for it, so I can't stop now.
Yeah, excellent. All right, what's your experience, Mr. Nixon?
I would just say you're not going to feel comfortable or like you're doing anything really well until probably year 3 or 4. So don't give up. It's a development process.
And don't be scared to try stuff.
I've failed many times with lessons. I'm like, I'm never doing that again as soon as it's over. So don't be afraid to try stuff and fail, and then do something new, and something will eventually work, and you'll find yourself. Yeah,
it'll click. Just give it time and be patient. But at the same time, you've got to, I'm going to stress to you, classroom management is really going to be your friend. What is the plan that you have to have? And it may take some trial and error to get that done too. What works for, right? What works with this age group? What works with these particular kids? What am I, you know, to get them to where they can listen to what you're trying to actually deliver? So work a lot on that, right? And that rapport. You don't want to stand up in front of everybody like, I will crush you if you don't listen to me. Like, that's not really the best plan, because now they're not listening to you. Because I remember having this. Now, here's another piece of advice, and then I'll let somebody else step up. Part of what helped me was remembering the horrible teachers that I had when I was in school, and a determination, an explicit determination to not be those people. Like, think about the crappiest teacher you ever had. Hopefully you didn't have many or any, but you may have. But think about that and go, I don't want to be that person. Right? I don't want to be that person. Yeah, sorry, Kevin.
Thank you.
Yeah, and email us. We're here to help if we can help you at all. All right, next.
My name's William Ivy, and my question is, what do you think is the best way a student can internalize a message that you teach so they can use it later in their life rather than just for a test?
Well, I think you have to find the way that it relates to you personally. Because, you know, we can teach concepts all day long. We can talk about events in the past. We can talk about political movements. But until you can relate it to something in your own life, it's not going to stick. So my advice is to, when you learn something, ask yourself, how does this affect me? How is it relevant to my life? There's a reason why they're teaching it. Why? And I think you'll go far with that.
I think there's this misconception on a lot of students' part where you don't understand your job in this scenario. Our job is to guide, to present information, to make connections, to clarify, to kind of push you in different directions, maybe stretch out your thought process, give you a more holistic sense. Your job is to actively try to learn it, try to connect it to something, weave that together into something bigger. I was talking with a lot of my sophomores, because we've gone through a couple of tests now and some of them are struggling. I'm like, look, your job is to find a way to solve the problems using the content that we've given you. We actually had some kids that complained. The essay prompt that you've given us, you didn't teach us that thing. We don't know what to say. Like, right, just like in math class, and some of you guys that have been in my class heard me say this recently, just like in a math class, they present you with problems and you have to figure it out. We've given you content. Now it's your job to figure out what to say. It's your job to figure out how to approach that problem. You have to be active. You cannot be a passive learner and think that it's going to stick. Take this, whatever you've seen in whatever class that you're struggling in, and talk about it with somebody. Repetition. You know why we know the story the way we do? I've got 10,000 years worth of history in my head. You know why? Because I do it every freaking day. I think about it every day. I teach it every day. I talk to somebody about it every day and go, ooh, did you think about this? Like, you can't just be sitting there and hoping it's going to like absorb into your brain. Otherwise, it's going to bounce off and you're not going to have remembered anything. You're going to struggle unless you participate in that process.
Yeah, and there's levels, of course, to the best way to learn. So some people just try to memorize a few things before a test and then try to just regurgitate that. Listening only, copying notes, neither one of these are effective in really learning material. You got to sit with it. You got to read something that's complicated, then think, and then summarize it. That's what I did today. We talked about summarizing for notes instead of just copying. Copying's not learning. Writing is learning, and writing is thinking. So, I mean, you got to learn it first. You can't just memorize it superficially. And then you got to make it meaningful. You got to figure out something that you connect with. So,
yeah, and one of the best things that you can do with notes is the night of or the next day, reread them. And instead of reading them just to read them, think about them. Think about why we had you take them, because there's a reason, and it's not just because we're trying to make your hand hurt. That's not why you take notes. Connection for me is everything. You have to find a way that it is personal.
I would think too, just to add one more piece on that, while you're going through the process of hearing it explained, be thinking about what that sounds like that you've already heard. What can you connect that? And be curious about, like, predict. Think back to what it might connect to, but predict where it might be going next. Or what else have I seen? You see what I'm saying? Like, when you set up little remembrances like that, it's much easier for you to hang on to that. Like, don't just go, you know, don't just hear it, listen to it, and think about it. That's it. I mean, Nixon's exactly right.
And the number one way to learn is to teach it. If you have someone you can abuse and teach it to them in a story narrative in your head, you're way more likely to learn it. You know, I am not, my brain does not process information probably as fast as most people in here, but I've done it so long, the hard drive is filling up because I teach it every year and I learn more and more. So if you can turn around and teach your notes in a narrative form, you figured it out in your head, you can teach it, you'll remember it then for sure. And
we've talked a lot about study groups too, like joining with a group of people who is like-minded and you want to talk about this together, even if it's just for a few minutes. It doesn't have to be hours and hours worth of studying, right? Just go, sometime, spend some time with it outside of class, right? Okay, that's a good question. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Joshua Weed, and this is all hypothetical. Say that we went to war with the country and you receive a draft notice, but you're able to pick which branch of the military you went into. Which one would you choose and why?
I'm going Space Force.
Space Force.
Yeah.
Space Force.
I'm going to show them.
It's the least likely to do anything.
I'm going to show them my ID and remind them that I'm not eligible for the draft anymore.
Is Space Force still a thing?
Yes. Yeah.
They still have the Star Trek uniforms and everything?
That's why I'm going Space Force.
They would kick me out because I'd sit around going, Space Force! I do that all the time, Space Force. No. I don't think I could stop myself from doing that. And then they would be like, okay, get out.
I'm going Space Force.
Besides Space Force, what would your answer be?
Coast Guard.
Coast Guard's a good answer.
Coast Guard
the coast.
Got to do like National Guard, you know.
George W. Bush went to Texas.
I mean,
do that.
Were you guys ever recruited coming out of high school for armed forces?
I mean, yeah, they talked to us, but okay. My dad had a big influence on me. I was obviously a sports dude and a farmer, and my dad came up through the Vietnam era, got drafted, but it was at the very tail end. And my mom had
your
just
dad.
Gotten,
your dad was drafted? You never told me that story. Okay.
Well, he was drafted to kind of like 72 towards the end, and my mom was pregnant, so he got out of it.
Oh, okay.
So he's of that, and he saw that, and he told, and as a farmer too, he's just like, not the military. I think he's lost some people that he knew, and we had a hometown guy that we lost, and he just kind of put it on me, sports, teaching, education, any field, not the military. So I never considered it just because my father, I mean, he was patriotic and all that, but, you know, for whatever reason, he really felt the need to tell me that. And so I've never given it much thought. But now that you're making me pick Space Force, beam me up. Because I can't imagine flying a plane, and I don't want to be near water, really. And that's everything, really. I mean, for finding another country,
that covers
water.
It. So, let's defend
the homeland, then. Is that what you're
can
saying?
Can I do, like, you know, like they like do the entertainment? Can I go sing to the troops, be part of the entertainment crew?
Yeah.
That's what I could do.
That's a good idea.
I'm not great, but, you know.
I don't know.
Elvis did it. Can I do that?
What did he do in the what branch was he in? Was he in the Air Force? He was in the Army. I couldn't remember. Okay. Yeah. Did it? I mean, I know they shaved his head, but did he actually go through basic training? I mean, was it?
I think he went through more than most musicians who actually do.
I mean, I don't know.
But I'll learn to. Well, bless my soul. What's wrong with me? I'll learn it if I have to.
USO. If I had to choose one, I'd probably go Air Force because I can't imagine being cooped up on a ship for that long. Although I applaud people who do it, I don't think I could be that guy. I'm not going to tell the story that you think I'm going to tell. So that's probably I'd probably choose Air Force.
Army journalist.
I don't think I could be a jet dude because I can't. I don't think I could go that fast and not be excited about going fast and forget what I was doing. Maybe a helicopter guy. You know, shove supplies out to people. I don't know.
I love this question for us three. I'll be helicopter guy. I'll be Space Force guy. We're thinking G.I. Joe.
I've got this vision in my head about sitting in a helicopter in Vietnam just with the door open and the shades down. Just I mean, I kind of see. I don't know why. That's,
I haven't flashes over here. I didn't actually have
I wasn't there.
Okay.
Maybe I've seen too many movies. Apocalypse Now. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Okay, anyway, that's interesting. Well, you've got the Air Force shirt on. Yeah, there you go. So have you selected? Are you actually doing this? Or are you just
not officially, I'm too young.
Okay, all right, I was just curious. All right, excellent. All right, step up.
My name is Clint Cox, and I was wondering what you think about Lakeside Administration, the new policies they've passed this year.
New
Such
policy
as?
About what
like,
now?
Like the new dress code and that
the
kind of thing.
The new dress code?
Yeah, like stuff like that, like the new policies.
Pick a policy. Speaking of which, our school board is here. So we'll tread lightly on this one. Is this a setup? This
I actually like the way they redid the dress code because it's more gender neutral and more fair to the female students. It treats them more equitably and less puts less focus and attention directly on them. And I think that was a good change. And I applaud them for that. That's the one that came to mind.
Yeah. If we're thinking dress code, and I think back to here's the old guy again. Back in my day,
yeah.
But when we were in school, like the dress code was basically, no genitalia. I mean, that was pretty much everything else was like you're pretty much good to go. It's not going to stop your learning. Do you have a hat? Nobody cares if you have a hat. Do you have sleeves? You got spaghetti straps? Who cares? Shoulders are shoulders. Let's learn something. It wasn't that distracting. If you had some sort of profanity on your shirt, which I'm not going to say I did, but if I did. And they made me change, then that's, I get that. But at the same time, let's just go do what we need to do, right? If you're distracted by someone's clothing or you can't control yourself because you see a shoulder, like we need to have a separate conversation with you, not the person wearing the
thing.
You're
going to see shoulders in the wild when you leave school. So I think it's a step in the right direction because it was weird. Certain things were illegal and then certain things weren't. And, as long as it's not distracting. And I think everybody's doing
dangerous.
A better job.
When
it does violate the dress code, it seems like it's getting taken care of pretty quick. So,
I've been pretty happy with the change. I haven't seen anything that I felt was negative.
Any other policy that you're referring to besides the dress code?
Students tend to dislike the new attendance policy, but I like it. So, I have more kids in class more often, and I'm always a fan of that. So,
exactly.
I know you guys don't care for it, but...
Well, once you kind of explain that, though, because I had a few kids who were like, I don't understand. It doesn't feel fair. Well, listen, you have to be in school. You have to be in school. And no, you're not going to get in trouble if you're actually sick.
Right.
But if you're missing school, somebody needs to find out why. Somebody needs to find out why you're not there. And if you need help, then we need to figure out a way to help you. If you need a plan, if you need accommodation, if you need some sort of special services, cool. Why aren't you at school? And if you legitimately are having problems, then let's go forward together as opposed to just you not show up and us wonder if you're going to be okay. Like, I just think that's a better plan moving forward. And it holds everybody more accountable because we have had people in the past. We have had people in the past who just abused that policy. So it just holds everybody a little bit more accountable. I like it.
I do too.
I will say the dress code, the most interesting part of the new dress code is allowing hats, which I didn't really see coming. But for some students, it's their dream. They showed up that first day, buddy. I'm wearing a hat. And I feel so comfortable.
The funny thing about that was, and I guess it's just because I grew up and it was no hats, no hats indoors, that sort of thing. And so when I first, I was like, oh, I hate that. But now that it's, I'm like, I don't hate that. I don't mind that at all. Like, I don't know why. I think it's just my
hoodies
socialization.
Hoodies are a
different
deal for me, though.
Yeah, hoodies because of the earbuds.
Yeah, the earbuds.
Yeah,
right.
So, but
eyes
the hats
and ears.
Don't
as long
bother
as we can
me.
See eyes and ears,
yep.
We're good.
Eyes and ears.
COVID changed a lot of this, obviously, from the... cameras
like,
and masks.
You know what else this helps us do? I don't want to spend all my day policing dress codes.
Yes.
We're going to walk around with tape measures and we're going to, your shorts are this long compared to your shorts.
Where
are
your fingers? Do they go all the way down?
I mean, I'm here to teach people, not to govern your clothing choices. You know what I'm saying? If it's not a problem, it's not a problem is what I'm saying.
That's my classroom rule. Yeah. All right, next.
Cool. Thank you.
Okay. I'm Emily Williams. And I just want to start by saying I listened to the previous podcast to see what I sound like, and I was really disappointed.
nobody thinks
we
they
don't
sound
listen
like they
to
sound.
Ourselves.
Yeah, it's weird.
So this question came from Twitter, which is a great start. I saw someone saying that a lot of people are bad parents because they want to have a baby but not raise a kid, and I just want to know your thoughts on that.
What?
Want to have a baby but not raise a kid.
Like, are we farming babies? What are you talking about?
Like, a lot of people want a really, small, cute baby, but then once the baby grows up, they don't want it anymore.
Oh, it's like a puppy.
Yeah. I was gonna say
my kids want puppies, but they don't want dogs.
Is that really a crisis in our country? Prevalent that people just want to have a little cuddly baby and then dump them off when they get a little older? Is that a thing? I mean, I don't know. I'm asking because it's... What did Twitter say?
They just said that.
I really hope not. That's disturbing. As someone who's worked in child abuse and maltreatment, we have way too many children that don't have homes, and our foster homes are overcrowded, and we can't find good placements. So I really, really hope that is not true.
If it is true, as a society, we have to figure out what the response is going to be. Is it about educating people to say, look, this is a bigger responsibility than you may think it is? What kind of services do you provide to the child afterwards that's actually going to function? I know you've talked a lot about DHS and some of the issues that they have trying to, the workload, the volume that they have to deal with is sometimes overwhelming. So we don't want to add to those problems for sure. But right, just from a personal responsibility standpoint, like, what are you thinking? Is it just a sign of generations who are so used to just instant gratification, all you can think about is, oh, I got to have this little baby and I got to have it right now. I'm not thinking about the future and what that means, because raising a child is a lifelong endeavor. I mean, I have adult children and I still care about them just as deeply as I did when they were newborns. You know, I still worry about them just as much because we committed to that process. I can't fathom that. That's beyond my scope of understanding that somebody would just be that callous and selfish.
Yes. Agreed. Next.
That was so heavy, man. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Hello. My name is Samantha Phillips, and my question is, recently there's been a lot of tensions between, like, countries, like North Korea. Like, North Korea dropped a missile and threw Japan into lockdown. Is World War III becoming a more probable event?
So, okay, let me just say my little two cents. World War III has been talked about for decades, and I think a lot of people today think of it like another World War II, and I don't think that's going to happen. I think you could, and this is kind of the scary thing, I think it's going to be a digital / physical war. As a matter of fact, I think it could be happening, and we wouldn't even know it because it's hackers and people in the intelligence trying to block, you know, this, you know, countries attacking other countries, China trying to turn the lights off in the U.S. on our electrical grid.
Which they did in Australia, by the way.
Yeah. So I think we think of World War III as troops, you know, boots on the ground, as they say, and weapons and normal combat. But if you look at from the Civil War to World War I to World War II, each war was so drastically different. I don't even know what a World War III would even look like. Because you could also have a small country with a lot of technology that could do a lot of damage. You don't need the massive numbers if you can shut off technology.
Or not even a country itself, just with the lone wolf sort of mentality. We've got a small collective of people that are going to, they have access to massive amounts of money. Let's say they've taken an oil-rich area like ISIS, for example. What if they had been able to continue and to function and to grow and to develop their technologies where they could actually threaten legitimate countries with legitimate borders? And they're so insidious, like, you wouldn't even know that they were necessarily there until it all happens. Like, that seems more likely than standard conventional warfare with, you know, armies crossing borders, even though we've got the Russia thing going on right now and China's threatening Taiwan and North Korea is always threatening everybody. It's just something they do for, I don't want to say just for attention, but it's kind of for attention, right? We want to show, you know, if North Korea, just since you brought them up specifically, if they were to actually hit Japan or hit South Korea or China, they've even threatened China in the past, even though they're like their lifeblood. The Kim family has been in power for so long, their goal ultimately is to stay in power and to obtain as much control over the population as they can. One of the ways they do that is through this perpetual narration that they're at war with the rest of the world, specifically with the U.S. and all of our allies. And so this show of force is more than likely just that, more propaganda towards his own people than it is for people on the outside. If they ever actually hit somebody, even China, who's generally a protector for them, I think would back off or help go in there and stop that, because it's just, right, that belligerency can't actually function, and that family then would be out of power. No ifs, ands, or buts, I don't believe. I mean, I think it would just be over. So I don't think that's the goal, to let it be over, right? And they're not going to claim the peninsula. To me, that's just nonsensical to think that they could start World War III. I'm more in line with what you were saying about the small things or the digital stuff.
World War I was machine guns, poison gas. World War II was airplanes and aircraft carriers. With everything hooked to the internet and computers and digital technology and it's a race. We've never slowed down in trying to invent new technology. And of course, it even explodes during war even more because people are competing even more. So you could see how World War whatever might be digital.
I mean, look what Ukraine has done. Citizens, with commercial drone, like things, drones you can buy, right? Things they have put up a resistance to what used to be a superpower in the world with citizens and drones that you can buy for on the internet, and that to me is insane. And it's, you're right, I think it does redefine what war will be like, even if it is physical and digital. And
On the Russia thing, do you think that Vladimir Putin is sitting there at night going, oh my God, how do I get out of this? Because I don't think he actually anticipated this kind of resistance. I think it seems like he thought Ukraine would probably fall over pretty quickly, that they didn't have much respect for Zelensky or the government that was in place, that the rest of the world would be like kind of turned a blind eye like they did in Crimea, and that'd be the end of it. But now you're in this corner and you've made these threats, and how do you actually walk out? I don't know that you, how does that guy save face?
Right. I don't know that. I would like to know what he knows. I would like to know the information people are feeding him. If he's in some bubble where he's protected from the
harsh
reality.
Which is what I actually heard some folks who've defected from there, who used to be closer to him, say that he's, during COVID especially, massive isolation. He was in this echo chamber. And maybe that was part of what fed this delusion that he could take over this other country. I don't know.
Yeah. He was very paranoid during COVID. If you see photographs of even his ministers, when he met with them, he would be at one end of the table, mm-hmm. and they would all be at the other. He had a very private inner circle that he dealt with. And so it could be that he is very isolated in a bubble.
Maybe. All right. Anyway, thank you.
Thanks. Yes. Next.
I'm Griffin Gully, and I was wondering, what was something you were taught when you were younger that, as you grew up, you realized was completely wrong?
Do we want to run down religions? Do we want to go there? Is that too sensitive? Is that way too sensitive? I won't go there. But something you were taught in regular school.
Oh. Well,
Or are you talking about like something your parents would have told you? Like, what do you mean?
Something like. Like parents, teachers.
We're not talking like Santa Claus and crap like that, right?
Yeah, yeah, no.
So something like more serious. Oh, I'm sorry, man.
Well, I mean, it was different when we were kids, obviously. But one thing when I was coming through high school in the 90s, you know, you had to go to college. If you don't go to college, you will not make it. That was pushed on us, I think, pretty hard in the 90s. I don't think that's true anymore. I think there's so many opportunities other places. Not everybody. Of course, only 50% of people graduate. So a lot of my friends got buried in debt in the early 2000s and didn't use the degree and then ended up, you know, so this whole you have to go to college mentality, I don't think that was correct, even though I felt pressure to go to college. And of course, I'm a teacher, so I actually did have to go to college. But that was one thing that was...
I can't think of anything that I was specifically taught that I was like, oh, that's BS. But I think I was under this delusion that adults knew what they were doing and that there was like some sort of, once you reach a certain age, I've got my stuff together and I'm like, I thought my parents were all collected and cool and had their stuff. I didn't realize they were winging it every single day. I didn't realize it was all ad-libbed, you know? So that was kind of this sort of shock when I was about 20. I'm like, oh, it's just me every day, like trying to figure out what I'm going to do to muddle through, you know, and try not to mess this up too badly, you know. So I think that dawning realization that there wasn't really, which was freeing in a way too, by the way, though, because, you have this kind of like what you were saying, we thought we had to do this or whatever. But then you realize that you can do whatever you want to within legal bounds, obviously, you know. But I remember that, like, now I feel like an adult, right? Because this is going to sound silly, but one of the things that was like, I'm a really big fan of Thanksgiving dinner, yeah? And so I was like, you know, I can't wait for, boy, it's been a long time. Sure would like some Thanksgiving dinner. And then I realized, damn, I could have Thanksgiving dinner any day. I'm an adult. We could cook it all up. I don't have to wait till November. We could just do it. Freedom! Do what I want.
But that is, it's like when I finally realized that it's mainly just made up. We as a people have just made stuff up. And we can unmake it up or we can change it. And, you know, that for me is when I'm like, yeah, so this is really just all man-made. Nothing. So
yeah, and you don't necessarily have to follow the patterns of the people who are around you, whether that is social attitudes, political attitudes, religious attitudes, whatever it is. Like, you can determine for yourself. At a certain point, you kind of go, huh, it's on me to figure this out. I mean, you can take this prepackaged thing that you've been delivered by your folks and go, yep, I'm going to swallow that and it's going to be my life. Or you can do something else. But it is your call at a certain point, right? Especially when you get out on your own. You're like, okay.
There is a fear, especially when you're junior, senior in high school, and you know, you got to make all these crazy decisions when you're so young because of the way our society's set up. It'd be great if you could do this in your 30s, make these big decisions that are going to last forever. But we go, no, you're 18, decide now. And I really had this it wasn't really coming from my parents, but just this fear that if I don't check these boxes, I'm going to be homeless and it's all going to be over and I'm going to be living under a bridge and it's just, you know. And it's not true. You'll figure it out with you know, just making decent decisions, hard work. You know, you'll find your lane. So, yeah.
Which doesn't mean that you won't struggle necessarily, right? I mean, you could make certain decisions, and you might end up having to dig your way out of something, but having the wherewithal to know that you can be strong enough mentally, physically, and intellectually to get that done, like, that's power too, right?
The thing to help any of this is open-minded curiosity. Keep an open mind, and if you're curious and you have an open mind, you'll figure it out.
Yep.
So don't just be locked into a box thinking, I've got to do this.
Other advice to you is that just because you're friends with somebody now doesn't mean you have to be friends with them later. Right? If you see people going down dark paths, don't follow them.
Yeah. Cut them
loose. Just, cut that loose and go on. Right?
Yeah.
It's a weird thing because they talk about little kids having imaginary friends. What I found out, weirdly enough, is that most of my friends were imaginary.
Especially as you head into college or graduate high school, you know, as much as it hurts some people to hear, you're not going to be friends with all of them forever. That you may be friends with some of them for your whole life, but you will change and you'll continue to change as you get older. And so don't be afraid of that change. Find out the answers for yourself and keep going.
Tell me why. All right, next question. Got a few more questions left.
I'm Sabrina Long, and I've got a silly question.
All right.
So I was just wondering, Star Wars or Star Trek?
Star Wars.
Star Wars.
Listen, I appreciate Star Trek, especially for the trend setting and the groundbreaking aspects of that story. But it was here's why. I don't think I was patient enough to really absorb what they were. You know, the messaging behind some of it felt a little slow. And I'm a little kid. I was like, but Star Wars was like, action packed, 24 years, and things blowing up. And it's like, that got my attention. Where Star Trek was much more cerebral. And I'm telling you right now, I was a stupid little kid, you know? I was like, hey, what's next? Star Wars was, anyway.
Probably.
What? Okay, so yeah, same thing?
Star Trek Next Generation. I miss Star Wars. I'm at that age where Star Wars came and went. And I wasn't right in the middle of it.
I wasn't either.
New Star Wars? Meh. Episode 4 and 5, those are the ones I kind of hang my hat on. They were, because I remember going to the theater when I was a kid. Like, we had, like, a truckload of us went to the theater. Malco Theater, right down the street. And we, like, loaded up, boy, and we're sitting in the balcony, and whoa, it came over the screen. I remember that like it was yesterday. But then they ruined it because it got cutesy and too many freaking Muppets. And, you know, it just, I like the space cowboy adventure aspect of it.
No, I did like the Star, and this is going to be an unpopular opinion, but I like the Star Trek when they did the reboot, the J.J. Abrams stuff, but the original.
Those were pretty good. Yeah, I like that.
My parents, once again, were on a farm. They never took me to the movies. I missed it during the summer. I came back to school. People are talking about Chewbacca and Yoda. I thought I went to a different planet. I don't know what's happening. And I just felt like the odd man out, and so
you're like Chewbacca, like that's that new red man.
Oh Lord!
Yeah, but Star Trek was on my TV.
Skull
I could watch
Bandits, and yes, remember Skull Bandits? Are you young enough to remember Skull Bandits? Are you old enough to remember Skull Bandits? That was an '80s thing. Oh my God, I'm old. Okay.
All right. Next question.
Okay. My name is Macy Burrows.
Get close to the mic.
What is the best life lesson you have learned?
The best lesson we have learned.
Life lesson.
A life lesson. Keep doing it.
Well, you're immortal, right?
That is right.
You're just going to keep doing it.
Yeah, I've learned that if you keep going and never give up, right? Persistence.
I no longer care what people think.
Oh, that's a good
that's
one.
That's a game changer in teaching.
And when yes, when you can when you get to
if
that
you've
point,
lived hundreds of years like me, then you'll know that people come and go and it doesn't really matter. You think about what you need to think about, sir. Take care of your own business.
Yes, take care of yourself, take care of the people that you love and care about, but don't spend time worrying about what other people think of you.
I think also if this is going to sound sappy, but
you
a level of gratitude goes a long way to sappy. Keep your priorities where they need to be. Sometimes bad things happen and it rearranges your priorities and you realize what's important and what's not. But also just having a moment pretty often to just stop and think about how much you actually have and people who don't rearranges your, you know, it keeps that in perspective. I think COVID hit us in a certain way and I think we saw what we missed like this. Teaching to no children wasn't really teaching. So yeah, I think having an attitude of gratitude, oh my gosh, I'm cutting this out. I'm cutting it all out. But.
That's all right. I'm going to put a sign over your door.
Attitude nobody would believe
gratitude.
It.
Attitude of gratitude.
You would, I'm going to get you a shirt. All right. Come on up.
I'm Allie. If you could go back in time and take over and rule any one empire, which one would you choose?
The American Empire, 1950s, 1960s to today. I don't know. It was so brutal when you go back. You don't have to go back far.
Yeah.
And you just realize, like, how different life was. I mean, that's not an interesting answer, I know. But
Tang Dynasty in China.
Or that. You'll do that.
Around 700 AD, because they're at this golden age, maximum capacity of, I mean, they were the owners of their world. They had more technology, more land, more people, more, I mean, they were aggressive, but they were also deeply rooted in themselves and it opened doors for more people, more wealth, more prosperity, more opportunities for more people than ever before in any other group of people on the planet. I think that would be the place to go. Just even if I couldn't rule it, just to sit there and be part of it, I think that'd be cool.
I'm with him. The more modern, the better, because I know that I will be horrible at adapting to the past. But you wouldn't try to go back. You want to throw them a bone, like Roman Republic versus Roman Empire?
Roman Schmoman. We've done that. Like Roman we are that.
They have an essay. That's what I asked.
No. Oh, I see what you're saying. No. I mean. The knee-jerk reaction, I'll be honest with you, I did go, hey, yeah, well, the Romans. But then, like you were like, it's cutthroat. It's very, like it was unstable for a lot of the times, especially once you get past Marcus Aurelius in 180. But when I think about, like, super dynasties, super empires, my American Empire aside, I think that one with the brilliance of the arts and the technologies and just, I mean, if you go back and really look at them, they were fascinatingly brilliant. Everything they did seemed to turn to gold. It was just stupendous. But the society supported itself. There was confidence in the leadership and the people that worked hard and that very Confucianist sort of mentality. And I dig that a lot.
The UK at its pinnacle?
You're going to be Queen Victoria?
Yeah.
Set up World War I.
I guess Prince
All the pieces are in place.
Sorry.
She was a badass. Well, I'll be Queen
she was.
Victoria.
That's true.
No, she's... Okay, yeah, we could do this all day. Okay. We have two more questions. Okay. Real quick, yes.
My name's Aman Patel. Yeah. So this one's more of a sports question. Okay. So recently Aaron Judge hit a 60-second home run that set the AL record.
Yeah.
Well, there's three people ahead of him, like, all time for a single season, but they were all, like, found in their careers at some point to be doing steroids. But not the season that they set that record. So do you think they should still have their record above Aaron Judge?
In the record books, don't they have a little asterisk by their names to indicate that they had some sort of boost in their lives? It wasn't like all natural ability.
Yeah, but people still debate like if that single season should count for them.
Every generation has a boost. that made like the athletes are so well trained and nutrition.
Do you ever stop and think about when Babe Ruth set that record at 60 I mean, you ever seen Babe Ruth?
Oh, no.
Dude was not really an athlete. He was just like, he had just this super right coordinated knack for his, the coordination. He's just, I mean, he's this heavy set drunk guy, and he just happens to be able to connect with that ball. To me, that's more impressive than somebody who's on roids, you know what I mean? Or human growth hormone or whatever it was they were accidentally falling into.
And you still got to hit the ball, I mean, too. Yeah. And that was a time of really good pitchers as well. They just.
Yeah, to me, it's more impressive.
I really enjoyed it.
Without the enhancements. Yeah, it is.
All right.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for coming
out. Thank you guys so much.
Collective Coffee.
Hey. Thank you to Collective Coffee. We will see you first Thursday of each month. Goodbye.